everybody. Welcome to the Family Gamers Podcast. This is Magic Episode 29.
Magic is wonderful.
Yeah. We like magic.
How's everybody doing today? How are you doing today, honey?
I'm good. We have a pretty exciting interview coming up later in the show.
We do. We've talked about this game a lot over the past, over the past year, we've kind of touched on it. And then we saw it again at Boston Fig, got a review copy in. We'll have a review going up at the end of this week.
Mm-hmm.
And that game is Robot Riddle. We were lucky enough to have Kevin Crane, the creator of Robot Riddle, Baba Geek Games, on the show.
Yep.
And it was neat. We got to talk a lot about the kinds of things that our kids are into, the kinds of things his kids kind of do, and what our impressions, what our light impressions were of the game. But you should definitely read the review on thefamilygamers.com.
You sure should.
So, what have you been doing recently?
In the meantime, we've played some games, and our kids have played some games.
That's a thing that we do. We are the family gamers after all.
Yes. Let's see. Most recently, with our regularly scheduled game group, or some subset thereof, we played Takedo again.
Yep. It's just as zen as it was before.
It was slightly less zen this time, because one of the people who had never played it before was like, wait, but do I do this? But wait, now I'm losing.
And then she won.
Which was pretty funny. But what else did we play? We played Ticket to Ride, the Pennsylvania.
Yeah, the Pennsylvania expansion or Pennsylvania map or whatever you would call it for Ticket to Ride is really interesting. If you have not played the Pennsylvania map before, but you are a Ticket to Ride fan, I definitely recommend you check it out. So, unsurprisingly, it is a map of Pennsylvania.
Mostly with a little bit of New York and Toronto.
Right. It's got like Western New York thrown in there. But the really neat thing about this map is that each of the routes have they would be railroad brands would be the companies.
Real railroad lines.
Like B&O, Pennsylvania Cross, Pennsylvania, blah blah blah. I don't remember any of them for some reason. There's an Erie one in there somewhere.
There's a Buffalo, Rochester, and Philadelphia, I want to say. It's Buffalo, Rochester.
The burp one. Right. We called it burp. So the way the game works is it's standard Ticket to Ride. Mm-hmm. There's none of that crazy, like, well, I guess there's one or two tunnels that you have to use locomotives for. Like going to Ontario.
Yes, if you're trying to go to Ontario, very few. Have to use locomotives, but nothing else does.
Right, sort of like that was introduced, I think, in Ticket to Ride Europe. But the really interesting twist with Pennsylvania is that there's all these real railroad companies, and then if you play a route on any of these routes that have the railroad companies attached, you pick up a company card.
You're basically every time you build a piece of route, you are also acquiring stock,
right,
for a railroad company. Now, some routes can be, you get your choice of one of many, and some routes you only have one choice.
Mm-hmm.
And as the game goes on, some of the companies, their stock may be gone, so your choices get smaller and smaller as you go.
Right, and different companies have different amounts of stock. So
yeah.
I think the most is maybe 7 or 9 in one or two things.
9 or 11.
And there's a couple that only have like 3.
There's one that only has 2.
Yeah, and so the way it works is basically whoever has the most of that stock at the end of the game gets bonus points. If there is a tie, whoever has the lower number. So
whoever picked up the stock first.
Right, so the pile is in order. Yeah. 1 through whatever, and whoever has the lowest number of stocks. So, for example, you know, player X could have picked up number 1, but I have 2 and you have 3, and if we tie, then I win because I've got a lower number.
Right.
So.
Okay. What else did we play?
We played another game that we got in for review called Battle Goats.
Oh, yeah. We're just starting to try out this game. We haven't played quite the full version yet. We tried a stripped-down version to make it a little easier for...
Right.
The,
yeah. So
younger kids in our group.
We've talked about the necessity of rule shifting before, and it's on previous podcasts. It's a thing that because we have kids of different ages and different abilities we have to do. Battle Goats is a game that primarily relies on the numeric power of cards, but lots of cards have special abilities.
Right.
And so the way we rule shifted this one is that we just took off all the special abilities and merely went with the numbers, because he can count, he just can't read yet.
Yep.
So I really like that game. I think that game is a clever mix of like war and memory.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to trying it a few more times. And
yeah,
then,
definitely.
For those of you listening, expect a full review of Battle Goats on the Family Gamers website in a couple of weeks.
Yep. So let's see what else. What else? So we got a few more things in for a review.
Yep. And the kids have been the two older kids have been playing some games on their own.
Which is awesome. That's kind of the whole point of why we do what we do.
We like to see that.
Physical games, even.
They've been playing some Battleship.
I like Battleship.
And they have really started to get into playing Mastermind.
I love Mastermind. I remember when I found Mastermind on the Target website and I talked about it on the show. I was so excited to get the classic Eastman.
Yeah.
I think Eastman, is that the name of the company? Mastermind.
But it's so that was good. That was a present last Christmas.
Yep, that was a Christmas present.
So it's taken a while for them to get into it.
Or did we give it to her for her birthday? I think we gave it to her for her birthday, which was just last month. Yeah, because we held on to it for a while.
All right, but even if we gave it to them a month and a half ago, it's still taken them a while to get into sort of the idea of how to play it.
Mm-hmm.
But now that they've got it, they're switching back and forth. Who gets to be the mastermind? Who has to be the guesser? And
well, because it's fun on both sides.
It is.
So it's good. I mean, that really is one of those things where it's like, this is a classic game.
And something we've talked about before, that is an extremely well-balanced two-player game.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it with more, and you certainly can't do it with less.
Right. On a kind of a non-family gamers sort of level, I picked up the new Tomb Raider game.
You did.
So if you are a video game player and you have a PlayStation 4 and you haven't played the new Tomb Raider, Rise of the Tomb Raider, that game is great. That game is awesome. All right, I'm done.
That's all right. What else? So aside from gaming, there was something I wanted to talk about quickly.
Oh, yeah. So once in a while, we don't feel like cooking food, and so we go out to eat. But, you know, we're a family, and so we go to cheap places. And so we took our highfalutin selves over to Burger King.
Yeah. He's the king of burgers, man.
Well, you know, it's a flame broiled and all.
Yeah. But while we were sitting there waiting for our last child to finish up his chicken nuggets, I started looking at the kids' meal bag because, you know, it's something to look at and read. And
yeah, it's like when you're on the toilet. You just have to read anything.
Yeah,
like,
sort of.
Like the back of the shaving, you know, cream can or something.
Well,
but you had the bag for the kids' meal.
I had the bag for the kids' meal. Well, and there's a secondary reason here, which is that as a parent, I kind of want to be like, hey, what is this stuff around my kids trying to teach them? Why?
Oh, she's so wise, everybody.
What? I mean, not like, I'm not seeking the stuff out, but kind of like, I wonder what this says, since our oldest who can read was looking at the bag and reading it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the kids had kind of been looking at it together, and it has all these different characters on it. King Jr., who's a crown, an apple with some kind of personality and face, a hamburger, a nugget, fries, etc. And then at the very bottom of the bag, right underneath all these different characters, it says...
In like the same level font.
It's same not same like level font. Away. It's actually highlighted a little bit, like a tiny little banner. It says, hey kids, this is advertising. And then under that it says, a menu filled with smart, tasty choices your kids will love. You know, and on and on.
Yeah.
But when I saw that, that really struck me that they would be that...
Conscious
of it without... You know, without making a big deal out of it, I thought it was cool because it is tough to teach our kids that everybody out there is trying to shape their perception of the world, some more consciously than others. But when it comes to a lot of the things our kids think are fun, everybody's trying to sell you something.
Right.
Or more specifically, when you're a kid, sell your parents something.
Well, so here's the deal. So you mentioned it, and it's this cute thing with these, you know, there's a burger with eyes and a face, and there's a chicken nugget with eyes and a face. And, you know, that is, advertising is designed to create discontent. That's what it's for. It's designed to make you want something.
Yeah.
And so the fact that it says at the bottom, hey, kid, this is advertising, for us, you know, that our kid turn around and say, what does advertising mean?
Right.
And then the answer is, well, you know, I mean, these things are pretty cool. Does it make you want to have a burger or want to have some chicken nuggets because they look neat and they look interesting and stuff? Yes. Well, that's what advertising is. And every time you see that, now you kind of, you know, it helps to teach kind of something that's almost like an abstract concept to a kid normally. Yeah.
Or even, you know, I can guarantee one of our kids would be like, no, it doesn't really make me want to because I just ate one. But turn it around and say, well, does it make you maybe want to come here again instead of going somewhere else like Wendy's or McDonald's or something for their fries and burgers and chicken nuggets?
Right. And we can even point out, look, these are these kind of cute things that look kind of cool and they're fun. And that's designed to appeal to a child as opposed to us. We get, you know, the Olive Garden steaming pile of gross because I don't like Olive Garden. But, you know, like the fettuccine Alfredo with the drippy cheese. And like, that's how you appeal to an adult. And so it's neat, especially with our daughter, who's very cerebral anyway, to kind of like explain some of that stuff and be like, so they show you stuff that appeals to you and they show adults stuff that appeal to them. And that's why when we watch football, daddy turns off the commercials.
Yes. Actually, it makes me think of a while back, McDonald's had a really clever advertising campaign.
Oh, the super adorable one? Oh, that was awesome.
No, not
that one?
Not the one.
I want to talk about that one too because it was awesome.
But one aimed at parents where it was basically saying, to be crass about it, give your kids the chicken nuggets they love, treat yourself with a really awesome salad. I mean, it was wrapped up in a lot more layers than that and trying to kind of come at it from an angle and not directly. But that's what they were trying to say is like, we're a good choice for your kids and for you.
Right. McDonald's had a different ad that I really liked because it definitely pulled at the heartstrings. If you haven't seen this, I recommend you look it up on YouTube where it shows two kids basically sharing food back and forth, but there's like a weird cut. And then at the end, you realize that it's a dad with his daughter. And
oh, that's the one where there's the little boy getting all these things and then
handing them to the girl.
And then hands it to the girl, and the girl always gets something that's
like
a
better.
Little better.
Exactly.
So like the boy gets a stuffed puppy and the girl gets a real dog.
Right. And then at the end, you know, you see like the boy giving some food, some like McDonald's, like pushing a kid's meal or something across the table to the girl who gets like a slightly better one. And then the cutaway fades and you see that it's the dad remembering all the things that he got and he wants to give the better thing to his daughter.
Yeah.
And so they're basically McDonald's is throwing shade at their old self and saying, now we're better. Give us to your kid. But it was just
100% white meat chicken nuggets, man. No hormones.
They have the worst chicken nuggets. You need to, comment on this post and tell us who has the best chicken nuggets, because I think Wendy's has the best chicken nuggets and you think McDonald's has the best chicken nuggets.
I used to say McDonald's had the best chicken nuggets, and I realize now that it's not so much that they have the best chicken nuggets. I'm backpedaling
here. They're the worst. Actually, they're not the worst. Burger King's chicken nuggets are really bad.
But it's really that when I was a kid, I loved that super crispy, so much fried gunk on the outside of the chicken nuggets. And so it hits a little sort of chord with me. But yeah, no, when I think about it, I would no longer pick McDonald's chicken nuggets.
All right. Well, still, we're interested in your opinions. Tell us what kind of chicken nuggets you like.
Whose chicken nuggets do you like? So, is it maybe not even one of the big three?
Chick-fil-A. Okay. That's fair. All right. But anyway, so that's some stuff that we've kind of run into. I just thought this Burger King thing was like, the whole point is, you know, way to go, Burger King. You're being not crappy.
Yeah, you're teaching our kids to think a little bit about what's going on around them.
Right.
Which is great.
So what else have we been doing? Is that pretty much it? Oh, we have some news. So we're in the paper now.
We said that
last time. In Central Mass, which we said last time, but we're going to be on TV too.
Yeah. In Central Mass.
also in Central Mass. There's a show that reached out to us because they saw us in the paper and they want us on their local cable access channel. But whatever. It's good. It'll be a fun experience. We're going to make up t-shirts. We're going to look all nerdy with board games. It's going to be great.
So much.
It's going to be awesome. And it'll be available online. So once it's up online, we can share it on Facebook. So that'll be awesome. But I think that's going to be basically it for us right now. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to jump right into that interview with Kevin.
With Kevin.
And then as soon as that's all done, I think we'll wrap up the show, and that'll be it.
All right.
All right. See you soon. Hey, everybody. This is The Family Gamers, and we are really excited to be here today because we have a chance to get together with somebody that we met about a year, almost a year and a half ago, who we saw his new game that he was working on then, and that game is now finally on Kickstarter. That game is Robot Riddle, and his name is Kevin Crane, and he's with us today. How are you doing, Kevin?
I am doing fantastic. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, darling?
I'm good.
Okay. I didn't want to speak for everybody.
Thanks.
So to tell the story, you know, everybody always asks when they see people that seem to know each other, it's like, oh, how did you meet? How did you get to know each other? So last year at Boston Festival of Indie Games, it was near the it was the middle of the day when I first walked by, but you were surrounded by a mob of people. So I kind of caught up with you at the end of the day and said, "Hey, this game that you have, this looks really, really amazing. Can you tell me about it?" And you had just started out with a lot of the mechanics, and you were just sort of getting things going. And everybody was like, "You need to wrap up and clean up right now." But what I saw last year was this incredible and gorgeous art for this really, really cool looking game called Robot Riddle, which was really designed for kids, and those were all things that I was interested in. So tell us about that. Tell us about the art, because I think the story of the art for this game is really cool.
So about a year ago when you saw it, the art was the best thing going for it.
definitely, concept, don't sell yourself short.
The concept was great, and the gameplay was pretty good. Just it wasn't tight at that point in time. But how the art came about was, so I'd been working on the game for a little while. I'm at about 3 years now of working on it, and early on, I decided to do this thing, right, where I'm going to do it, and wasn't really interested in talking to publishers or anything. I wanted to do it because it's my first project. I want to go see it through. So in order to motivate myself, I went and found people that did artwork on DeviantArt, and thinking that I couldn't afford someone nice and famous or, you know, that has these kind of things before. So I was hunting on there, and I found a few people, and I sent some messages out. I got a couple of responses, and the guy I ended up eventually going with for pretty much everything turned out to be John Ariosa, who did Mice and Mystics and Bullfrogs and several other games. Fantastic artist, and I didn't realize this until a few months into working with them, and I somehow stumbled across his name on Mice and Mystics. I'm like, "Did you do the art on Mice and Mystics?" He's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Why are you working on my game? I don't understand."
Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah, you did this incredible stuff.
So that was kind of how I got John to work on my game, is I just didn't know any better, right? And then when I was doing – the reason how I was motivating myself was the – two ways. One was every time I got a piece of art, it was an incredible motivational thing, right? Because I tell them a little bit about the character, and either maybe give them a section of the story I was working on, and then he would sketch some stuff out, and I would just get even just a little sketch. I'd be like, "Oh yeah, this looks so good." And then so we develop it, and then every time I got the piece of art, it was just another motivation to "Oh, let's get working on that game again." And then the other motivation was to have the money, right? Because I was actually spending a good amount of money on this artwork, because there's a lot of artwork in my game. So between those two factors, I was able to get my game done.
I almost wonder sometimes if maybe we actually were right in the middle of playing Mice and Mystics with our kids, so maybe there was some kind of familiar stroke to the art that caught our eye. But it really is, it's gorgeous. We really like it a lot. But what I do want to do is I want to take a step back, because we jumped right in, sort of like you did, and started with the art in a way. Mm-hmm. But the name of the game is Robit Riddle. Not Robot Riddle, but Robit Riddle. So it's a little bit different. So tell our listeners a little bit of what's that about, and by extension, what's the game about? How does the game work?
Okay, so the name is Robit Riddle, and the reason I named it that is I like to make my stuff as hard to pronounce as possible. But the focus of the game is on these pets, these what I call robits, right, are the robot pets. So I call them robits because it's cute. I don't know. It's just the way I took it. So I'm working with these robits, and so all throughout my game, there's a bunch of alliteration. So like all the names of all the characters, everything is, you know, double letters, right? So the same letter for both of them.
Yeah, like Vic Vroom. Yep.
Yeah. Beep Bop and all, so on and so forth throughout the whole game. So that's kind of, I don't know. It started off as I wanted to use, which I have. Every letter in the alphabet is represented on the cards. Plus some are doubled up, but I wanted to, like, because I have this kid focus to it, right? So I wanted to kind of carry that through everything I did. So, and the reason, you know, the thing about the game, so how the game is played, it's basically kind of like an introduction to role playing, for, you know, kids or just anybody that really hasn't done much role playing or doesn't think they're very creative. And how this came to be is, I have two boys, and they're high influences in my life, and one loved to read, but didn't think he was a very good storyteller, and then the other one loved to be read to but hated to read, and he was a great storyteller. So I was trying to play off those two main things to help them learn, right? So that's where the idea of the game came from. And then the gameplay is basically you get a character, and it's very, very simple. The rules aren't all that complex, and it took me 3 years to get to the end of the rules, but I think it's a good thing, right? Because like when I first started designing, I was like, I throw everything in, right? And so I had to peel apart the layers until I got to the smallest possible piece I could to make it still the game I wanted. So you start off with these characters, and you just take like a choose your own adventure style storybook, very much inspired from my youthful years, and you just read through it, and at the bottom of every page is your choices of which way you want to go, and then the storytelling. So that's the narrative part. There's lots of narrative you're going to read and see what happens in the storybook, but there's also storytelling. And the storytelling happens when you have an encounter with whatever, like a trap or possibly an ally that might join you or whatever. And you're going to have to roll dice and see how the outcome is going to be. So, and the reason storytelling comes into play is because more than likely when you roll the dice is you're not going to be able to do it on your own. You're going to need the other characters or the other players to help you out. And we do that via storytelling. So we, like the lead character will tell something about how they're handling this encounter. And then everyone else has these story cues that they're going to use and spend these story tokens on, which are little gears that on these things that they're going to hopefully be able to figure out how to get past and add to that story that the leader kind of led off with. And you keep going until you get to an ending in the book. So.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like it. One of the things that that I really like about it is the fact that as a the core mechanic of the game is storytelling, right? This is actually something that you picked up on, Anitra.
I picked up on when it comes to role playing type stuff. I'm more of a hack and smash and move pieces around the board type of person, but I do like, as a parent, I like that. Because storytelling is the main mechanic rather than fighting as the main mechanic, it means that the game is not intrinsically violent. It's not all about fighting. I mean, you can make it about fighting if you want to, but...
Right, but, yeah. It's not, you know, it's not like the violence is the core mechanic for advancement, right? So when, you know, when everybody's a bard, it's not bad to be a bard.
I guess that's where this is going, yeah.
But I... You know, the other thing that I really liked about it, and I know we touched on the art a little bit, but the way that, you know, when you look at these characters, even just the visuals tells a little, gives a little bit of information, tells a little bit of a story on its own. And I really liked how, you know, we would go to a place, we would go to Pattering Plant, or we would meet up with the rusty old sailor, who literally was rusty. And they would see these pictures of these characters, and you'd kind of get that they'd look uneasy.
Yeah.
Right? Almost like when you're watching a movie and a character comes out and he's a little disheveled and you're like, uh-oh, what's going to go on with this guy? And then I'd start to read and I'd be giving him a silly voice and you know, kind of this grub voice that makes me have to cough a lot and, you know, all these kinds of things. And then sometimes what they thought the character was going to be like is represented in the narrative and sometimes it's not. And to see kind of their reactions to that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's amazing what John can do with, you know, his digital pad. These characters, I mean they have eyes, but they have so much expression when they're just these metal beings, right? So right. He does an amazing job relaying what I'm putting out as far as like details for how this character should look or feel.
Right.
Sure. One of the hardest things for our family was related to this this fact that the narrative is all kind of around the edges of the story, and you're not handed immediately, here's what you should do next. You know, trying to figure out from the constraints you already have, well, what can we do to get through this encounter? Well, you know, I have this story cue that says, I think fondly of my grandbot. I don't know. My grandbot taught me how to talk like a pirate, maybe?
And you know what? That has never come up before, and that is amazing.
But you know, I mean, it could be, who knows? But, I mean, that was really the thing that our kids, I think, struggled with a little bit. They're, especially our son, our younger one.
Yeah.
He's, because he's not as outgoing. He's very imaginative. But he's not that outgoing, and even though it was just our family, he was getting kind of shy with this idea of coming up with a story almost out of nothing.
Right.
You know, we've played with things like Rory Story Cubes, where it says, okay, so these are the core things you kind of have to focus on, and who cares what's actually happening? Which is very different from, this is, okay, we need to figure out a successful conclusion, you figure out how to get there. And, you know, that's something that you and I have actually talked about over email a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So... Yep. So that's an interesting thing that I think there's a lot of great room for growth with our kids to see how they learn how to tell stories with different kinds of parameters.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like I said, that's kind of one of the reasons why I did it. My oldest is just like that. He is actually quite good at using his imagination. But when it's like, you know, a game is put in front of him, or, you know, he's put on the spot, he like shuts down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I will definitely say that over the course of 3 years of beating this into him, over if we have to play test my game, he's definitely gotten better. So
hopefully Robot Riddle doesn't turn into a discipline scenario. You're going to have to play another 3 rounds of Robot Riddle, son.
it's definitely it has definitely helped him. You know, it also helps when, like, we've had his friends over and, you know, some of his friends are like hams, right? Seriously, like get up on stage and just ham it up. And when my son's around them, it's awesome because then he lets loose a little bit. So it's the dynamic changes completely when you start adding different people in and when you have different people being the leaders and the different things that can happen because of that.
Right.
Sure. Sure.
So when we took a look at the game, we picked up a preview copy at the last Boston Fig, and in that game was one storybook. There's one storybook that's completed, and I was browsing through the Kickstarter page earlier today because it went up on Kickstarter this week, and it says that there's going to be at least 3 storybooks in the box.
Yeah, so there's a plan for 3 storybooks. I'm trying to hit my funding goal in the first week, and if I do that, I can pretty much guarantee the cost of production is going to be low enough to a point where I can immediately add another book. Nice. So I'm trying to hit that, and if we do really good, then there'll be 2 more that can go in the box. So that would be a lot of content.
That's a lot of writing for you.
Yeah, it's a lot of writing. So I mean, I've gotten pretty much two of the books done, and I'm like outlined the third, and then like more than outlined the third, and then the other three books have all been like frameworks established and some of the outlines done, some of the pathing done. Mm-hmm. But yes, it'd still be a lot of writing.
But that's good too, because I mean, for let's see, your Kickstarter says that the game's going to start at $40 plus shipping. For $40 to have three or four storybooks worth of content to play through, is that gives a lot of hours of gameplay.
Yeah, and so I should cover this because it's a big question that I get asked a lot, and it's good to define again that. So each book has about 20 endings, and of those 20 endings, five are really, like, really pretty juicy and, like give you lots of information, but kind of different in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And then five endings, like, lead to the other books. So they're giving you hints about some of the other ongoings in the different parts of the space, the different parts of Tinkdown that you're in. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be, like, another handful that's, oh, you get a little information, and it could be about this book, it could be about a character specifically, but you might not really know how it connects. And then there's like some endings that are just like, you chose poorly. Don't go this way.
A couple of those.
And that's great because, some of those endings can be really quick, which is, I think I have it listed as 5 to 45 minutes of playtime. 5 minutes if you hit some of those you chose poorly endings, or 45 minutes if you're like doing a lot of role playing. Most of the time it's going to be about a half hour. But if you're like hitting those you chose poorly, you're going to get a lot of plays out of one book. So I'm guessing about 10 plays on each book is a kind of a good estimate. So 30 plays on three books is my guess.
That's a lot. You know, I was talking with we have Pandemic Legacy, and a friend of mine does not like the destructible nature of that. And I said, well, I mean, how many games are you going to play 24 times, which is the most amount of times you'd be able to play that. So if you're getting more than 24 plays out of the game, then you're in a really good place, I think.
Yeah.
And you're not destroying the environment the whole time. So, hey.
Yes, and you can hand it off then and let others enjoy.
Exactly. So it looks like you've got a little bit of time to put this and whatever stretch goals that you have together. You're looking at, I think, December of 2017 for delivery.
Yeah, and the main reason for that is because I have to write the books. I'm not sure about what stretch goals we're going to unlock, so that's the main reason.
That's the under-promise, over-deliver method. I like it.
Yes.
And there is also something else that's interesting that I saw on the Kickstarter, which is the educator tier, which is a little bit different than some of the other things. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it's really just an educator discount. Or educators can come talk to me, and if it's for like the classroom or anything like that, they get a discount. It's also for people that may want to donate, may not be interested actually in the game for themselves, but like the idea of helping schools. So I will donate the game for that amount of money to the school. There's also like there's a tier that combines, I get both a game and I give a game to a school.
Which is nice. Yeah. Was that $65? I think I saw that plus shipping.
Yep.
So that's a really good deal for that one.
Yeah.
So back to the game itself, we noticed when we were playing the prototype that all of the materials that were in there were really high quality, nice high quality paper. It didn't feel like something that might, you know, rip apart as we turn the pages. Not saying that I've played some games that are like that, not even as a prototype, but as a finished game, really disappointing. So I really loved how high quality everything looked and felt. I'm sure that you're going to try to keep things at that quality, in your final retail box.
Yeah. So that's kind of, hopefully that's the baseline. I have to give, all the props for that to our local print shop here. Actually, I think it's a little chain here called Infinite Imaging. They did an amazing job every time I went in there. So I really like them.
them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and you and I have had a couple of conversations about the quality of the components and stuff, and I know that that's something that you care a lot about. Yep. So I have confidence on my end of saying, you know, we can expect that when the retail game does come out, it's going to have at least that level of quality. So that's awesome, because I think having a premium product in your hands just kind of feels good.
Yeah. I plan on going forward with this, and I don't know if I told you this or not before. So the idea is, like, I want to be my own publisher. I want to do these kind of games, right? That are, you know, maybe family games that bring new people into the hobby that might not be doing this kind of thing before. Right. But specifically with this series that Robert Riddle is kicking off, there's a little tagline under it, says Storybook Adventures. I want this Storybook Adventures to be intro to role-playing games for families, and each game will have its own kind of universe. I mean, it all exists in this robot universe, but each will have its own, like, little, like, town or whatever. So Tinktown is the storytelling town. There might be another one that's dungeon crawling town, or you know, skill building, that kind of thing. So taking different elements off of role-playing games and putting them into simple little games.
I like it.
And all using these choose your own adventure style storybooks.
That's cool.
I like that idea.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've said it a few times already. We are super excited for this game. We had a lot of fun, even though we struggled with some of the pieces because of our kids' personalities and stuff.
And my personality. Let's not lie.
All right. I'm trying to be nice here. Come on. even though we struggled a little bit with you know, some of the personalities in our family, which I think we can work through, I really had a great time with the game. I mean, there were some meta aspects that kind of made me chuckle, like having the bookmark, which is very much a throwback to the Choose Your Own Adventure kind of stuff. Yeah. But there's just a ton of personality in it, and I really, really like that a lot. So we are super excited to see it finally come out, whenever that may end up being. But certainly, at least at this point, getting it on Kickstarter is a huge first step, and we're pretty excited for that.
Yeah, thank you. And I really appreciate you supporting me and taking the time. I really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely. There is one other thing that I wanted to bring up, which
not Robert Riddle related.
Right, which is, like, this is a commentary on Kevin Crane, the man, the myth, the legend.
Oh, geez.
Which kind of shows how involved you are in gaming in general, and how much you care about the hobby. And there's a group that you're actually a founder of that you just had your second event this past weekend.
Yeah, so we host a players convention, open board gaming convention, called Granite Game Summit, and you can find us on granitegamesummit.com or G2 Summit on Twitter. But basically, the past two events have been one day. Bring your games. We have a small library right now because we're just getting started. But if you bring your games, you can put them out on the shelves. If you want other people to play them, or put them underneath the shelves, you don't want people playing them. And just have at. In the last event, we had about 230, right around, people come.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, which is awesome for our second event in the same year.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to have – so that one just happened this past weekend. And so everyone that missed it, I'm very sorry.
Like us.
I'm very sorry.
We are too.
So we're having another one April 7th through the 9th. So 3 days. We're moving to 3 days, which is big for us. And it's going to be awesome. And
it's going to be intense.
We're going to have a bigger space and have hopefully lots of amazing things. So it's still going to be a big players convention, still the same kind of format, but we're definitely going to be expanding it.
Right, and that's the Southern New Hampshire area.
Yeah, sorry, Southern New Hampshire area. So Nashua, New Hampshire.
Well, we said Granite State. So,
yeah.
You know, anybody who's up on their state nickname should have known. But yeah, so Nashua, New Hampshire area.
Yep.
So I am super looking forward to that. That's going to be pretty cool. Hopefully we can go this year.
We're going to try to block it off on our calendars.
Yeah, I'll see if I can get our taxes done.
Fantastic. You can go to our website and buy tickets right now.
So, all right. Well, everybody, he is Kevin Crane. His game is Robot Riddle. You can find it on Kickstarter. You can check out our show notes. We will put a link directly to the Kickstarter in there. I definitely encourage you to check it out. Thanks so much, Kevin, for spending some time with us.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
All right.
You too.
So that was a fun interview.
Kevin is a really nice guy.
Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely
super interested in that that Granite game
summit. Yeah, it just didn't work for us this year, unfortunately. So I would say definitely check out Robot Riddle on Kickstarter. We'll publish a link to it in our show notes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, like we kind of alluded to, there were some things with our family that where it just wasn't working out that well. But I don't really think that's a failing of the game. I just think that was just the way it fit with our family.
I think it's also if you go into it with that expectation, you might have a better result that you might have to.
Right.
Maybe it's just a matter of time. When it's all done and shipped out to backers in a year or so, we might be ready for it then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really depends on how comfortable our kids are with making up stories with loose parameters instead of having driving plot points to use.
Well, and in another year and change, we'll have another kid who might be much more into the storytelling or not.
What? What are you telling me?
I'm telling you that our 2-year-old might be ready to play games then.
Oh, what a relief.
When he's 3.5, I think he might be ready.
Okay. Let me scrape myself off the floor. I'm kidding. I knew what you meant. All right, I think that's going to do it for us. So until next week, play games with your kids.